Hi, my name's Sharon, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sharon.
A grateful alcoholic today, as opposed to a very sick, floundering, and dying one 12 years ago. It's nice to be here. I successfully flew under the radar, so I hit the wall. I would say in retrospect, well, I'll start with, there's a passage in Came to Believe. It escapes me who wrote it right now. That's wrong. It's in AA Comes of Age, and I think it was Dr. Shoemaker, but I could be wrong, where he says that from his perspective, he sees alcoholism as being akin to Gothic stained glass windows. And a Gothic stained glass window can only be truly experienced for its beauty if the sun is shining on it and you're inside the cathedral looking out. And as in alcoholism, where we can only interpret our alcoholism once we've gotten in recovery from it. And I've loved that since I first read it when I first got sober, because in the past 12 years I've been able to interpret my alcoholism and in a way that makes it manageable for me with the help of this program. And I think I was born alcoholic. And I know that from a very early age I had secrets, and I was angry, and I rebelled, and I was anxious. I was never particularly happy. And I came from a very loving home. I didn't have, from appearances, any reason not to be a happy, well-adjusted child, but I wasn't. And I went to Sunday school, and God was fun, and Jesus loves me. But I don't think, from a young age, I figured Jesus wouldn't really love me if Jesus knew my secrets. I had secrets. I was a child, and I had secrets, and shame. And by the time I was a teenager and I picked up my first drink, I was rocketed into that next dimension, and I felt relief for the first time in my life. And alcohol relieved me of the terrible burden of trying to exist in a world that I didn't fit into, and one where I could get away from my feelings of ineptitude and failure. And I also, in retrospect, realized that my alcoholism was apparent from the very beginning. I could drink a lot, and I could handle it. And I used to drink with the guys because they could handle it better. Girls couldn't drink. And I'd just be having a good time, and, you know, people would be sliding under the table. And I now know that that was a sign of my alcoholism, that I could handle it so well. I'm not proud of the fact, but there was even times, but times were different, and I was a lot younger. But I've been stopped drunk driving and gotten away with it. I was in a car not too long before my bottom when the driver was, I guess the police were watching the bar, and we went out, we got in the car, and his license was suspended for drunk driving, so I talked the cop into giving me the keys. And I was completely drunk. So the signs of my alcoholism were there right from the beginning. And I loved to drink, and I would scheme to do it. And alcohol rapidly became the rapacious predator, because I started to fail in school. It started to take my life away, right away. I would, In grade 10, I was having trouble in school. I always had trouble in school because I didn't like authority. And I would jig school to drink, and I could drink a bottle of wine in an afternoon. And I had grown up, my mother became very wise as I got older, and my mother had always told me that alcohol was responsible for 90% of the prison, the reason why people were in prison, 90% of the violence in the world, and the evil in the world. And I thought, wow, it's a pretty powerful thing. I have to get out there and investigate. And I did. And I also thought that an alcoholic, the definition of an alcoholic to me was simply someone who liked to drink, and that was me. So it was okay to be one. And I didn't have a lot in common with anyone who didn't feel the same way. And it was always my drug of choice. I'm of an age where I grew up in the 60s, and I didn't see anybody doing other drugs without consequence. And I actually took some ribbing about being an alcoholic, because it wasn't exactly a hip thing to be an alcoholic. It was, you know, people were doing drugs and finding themselves in psychedelic drugs. And not that I wasn't open to doing that, but it was never, alcohol was always my love and my only love for many years. It was how I managed day to day. And I could tell you my story. It's not, I am, by the grace of God, I was never arrested. I never killed anybody. By the grace of God, it didn't make me particularly violent. It didn't make me violent when I drank. I was more to have some fun. And then, as it turned on me, the more maudlin type. And events in my life, I could never decide anything in my life. I could start something, I could never complete it. And my life has been rather serendipitous. Events would happen, and I just kind of got carried along with them. And the goddess was good to me, and I've been fortunate in my life because I almost gave my life up to alcoholism, and alcohol always came first to me. Part of the reason I got sober actually when I did was I was going on 42 years old, and I had lost my job. Alcoholism certainly in me, it's a progressive disease, and it was almost fatal. And I was able, I was pregnant in my 24th year. And I used to go to a bar where I drank. Of course, I went to many bars, but there was a local that we drank at. And I knew, this is 1976, and I knew that you don't drink while you're pregnant. So in the beginning, I would go to the bar and I would sit down and order a grenadine and pineapple juice. And that would be good for 15 minutes. And I'd have one beer. And then another. So I drank throughout my pregnancy. And I made the biggest deal, because I couldn't not drink. Don't think I could had any choice in the matter from my first drink at 15 years old onward. I had stopped drinking anything but beer, you know, most of the time, but as a regular drink at about the age 19, because I drank so much that I got alcohol poisoning by drinking scotch, and I realized the danger of that. So I could drink 24 beer, but you can't drink 24 pints of scotch. And so I backed off hard liquor because I needed a lot. So I drank during my pregnancy, and here I made the, but when I was ready to give birth, I made the biggest deal with God that if my child were born healthy, that I wouldn't touch it again. And so as soon as my child was born healthy by the grace of God, and I celebrated by getting drunk. This is the most natural thing to do. And at this point, I'm 25 years old, so the shame set in. There's shame now associated with my alcoholism. There's nothing fun about it. I've split into two people so that nobody knows what I'm really like and what I really do. And I do as best I can. I'm a mother, but I'm not the mother I want to be. I love my child, but it's like I'm in some kind of a bubble and I can't get out. I can't reach out. I can't truly enjoy anything because my life is dictated to me by my resentments and mostly by my resentments and my inability to be one among in the human race. And I manage. I had a job that I really loved, and I learned, there's another thing I forgot to tell you about my alcoholism. From the very beginning, when I started to drink, I couldn't stop. I would have to pass out. There were things that would happen, like some days in the early part of it, before it progressed, I would have a choice when I got up in the morning to drink or not. And I would choose not to when I had to go to work, because I worked with children and I had a job where you couldn't be hungover. Plus, I could drink till like 5 in the morning, so I couldn't get up and go to school at 8 or 7:30. So from Sunday through till Friday afternoon at 3:30, I didn't drink. I could control it, and I was the most miserable woman you'd ever want to meet. Don't talk to me, but I thought I was doing okay. And as my alcohol progressed, I'm in my late 30s and I'm starting to fall apart and I'm starting to shake. And I don't know why, because I'm not drinking during the week. And my life got to the point where I knew it was the alcoholism, because in my early life, my mother, I had been told, I didn't see people drinking. People in my family didn't drink. There was no, alcoholic behavior was not normal, and I knew it. And I knew I was an alcoholic, and I'd known I was one for a long time. But I'm a classic example of contempt prior to investigation. I'd heard about AA, but somehow I knew, having never been to a meeting, that it was a lot of old men sitting around in a circle talking. And what was a young woman with big ideas that nobody understood going to do there? So that AA wasn't for me. But eventually I decided that maybe a psychiatrist would be, because my job was on the line. I didn't actually get fired. I resigned because I'm being put just one step ahead of them in my resignation. My family was falling apart. My home was going to be repossessed. I had a duplex in NDG, and the mortgage company didn't like the idea that I was spending the mortgage money on beer. They came to visit me one day. And the only way out of this was to admit that maybe I had a problem. I went to see a psychiatrist, and he didn't even want to talk to me. He wanted me to go to the Montreal General and speak to the addictions counselor. So I went for an assessment thinking, well, certainly they're not going to want to admit me. But if they do, I'll go, because I was in arrears in all of my bills and my mortgage, and my family was willing to help me if I admitted I had a problem. So that's good enough. So I admitted I had a problem, not really thinking I did. And during the interview for the assessment, it didn't take them long to say, how fast can you pack? So now I'm on the fifth floor of the Montreal General in September of 1993, and it was the first time I kind of cleaned up and, you know, what am I doing here? I'm 42 years old and I'm walking the corridor of the fifth floor of the Montreal General, and I'm in here for alcoholism and I can't get out of here for 21 days. There's something wrong. And I was as scared as you can be. I was frightened for my life because I couldn't function without alcohol. And at this point in my life, I literally physically couldn't function most of the time without alcohol. And I met somebody in there. There were three of us in the detox. And this guy was my age. And he'd had 2 years sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had a slip and couldn't get back. But he 12-stepped me. He told me it worked. He said it was for people just like I related to him. And he told me that it was too late for him. And it was. He died 3 months after we got out. But he 12-stepped me into AA. And I'll tell you, in the end of my... I'm a very low-bottom drunk. I did lose my home, and I did lose my job. And my daughter went to live with her father. And I came out of detox, and I started coming to meetings. You know, I would wake up in the morning... in a urine-soaked bed with a bottle of beer beside me. I had to have something in the morning to get me going. And I came out of detox kind of, you know, with sort of a few days. Not really, I'll tell you this because it's true, not really 21 days clean, because I found out that the first time they let me outside the door to have a cigarette on Cedar, the first person I met asked me if I wanted to smoke a joint. And you want to believe I wanted to smoke a joint. So I smoked a lot of joints. But I didn't drink. And I went to an AA meeting. And I was really glad to be there, and I related to what everyone was saying, but there was a big problem for me. And that was, see, I had drank for 26 years, from the time I was 15 till I was 42, and I had no ability to stop. And you were, I believe, you know, that you were an alcoholic too, but I couldn't succeed at anything. And who really were we kidding here that I was all of a sudden going to be able to stop drinking? And indeed, at that point, I couldn't. So I came into AA in October of 1993, and my first sponsor said, don't drink and go to meetings. So I did drink, so I didn't go to meetings. I didn't even hear what she was saying to me. But AA, the seed of AA had been planted, and eventually I came to a point in my life where I was never suicidal, but I surely did not want to go on living like that. And plus, my daughter was graduating from high school, and I wanted to show up for her. And by this point, I couldn't show up for anybody because I never knew when I would be too sick to get out of bed. So I had been detoxed. I knew how to detox with Valium, actually. So my doctor gave me some Valium. I laid in bed for 3 days, and I got healthy enough to go to her graduation. And those 3 days gave me... enough. This is now we're in June of 1994 to say maybe go back. Just go back one more time. So I walked back into the doors of AA, and my sponsor, my previous sponsor, said welcome. And when I met her in '93, she said to me, "If you pick up a drink, you don't know what will happen." And I thought. Man, is this woman crazy? If I pick up a drink, I don't know what will happen. If I pick up a drink, I'll tell you exactly what will happen, because it's been happening every day for the last 10 years this way. But I didn't know what would happen. By the time I came back in, I'd lost my house. I was very sick. I had no idea. So I came back in and I said, "You're right. I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't want to drink anymore." And she said, "I said, but I can't stop." And she said to me, Did you ever question, she said to me, this voice in your head that tells you you can't? And I never had. A light bulb came on for me that day. I had never questioned the voice in my head that told me I was no good, that I was a liar, that I had secrets that were shameful, that I couldn't succeed, that I wasn't smart. Particularly, it was very hard to be me because I didn't want to belong to a club that would have me, but if you would have me, I hated you. So I questioned where it came from, and I realized it was my alcoholism talking. And if I sat down and opened up my mind that you people in AA had a solution, that you could give me another voice to listen to counteract it, and that I wouldn't have to die because I was getting close. I weighed about 118 pounds, and I was black and blue, and I had serious liver problems, and I wouldn't have survived another 2 years. And so it was just a pretty simple concept to say, today I'm not going to have a drink, and I want what you have, and I don't have to listen to the voice that tells me I can't have it. And things changed to me. And I got on my knees, too, the morning after my last drink and said, I'd always said, God, help me. Every time I got in a mess, I said, God, help me. So I didn't have any problem with this concept. And there, I had a stirring, a physical stirring, a kind of Bill W. white light experience. And I was fortunate enough, because now it's October of 1994, and we were celebrating 50 years of AA in Montreal, and there was a huge convention that year at the Palais de Congrès. And I was 18. I got sober on October 1st, 1994, and it was the weekend of, I think, the 18th. And I had never felt so. I was as relieved as the dying can be. I thought, there's a solution. And I'll never forget how I felt at that conference. I was overwhelmed with relief and the beginnings of a little joy. I loved people in AA like I'd never loved anyone else. I was 8 months sober when I realized that I was getting sober, because I had been getting sober since I was 19. I was always, in those days, we used to say, I'm going to get my shit together. I'm going to quit drinking. And I had been quitting drinking since the age of 18. So that was nothing new. But one day I was about 7 months sober, and I said, oh my God, I'm getting sober. It was wonderful. And nobody asked anything of me. I became a part of. And I simply, in my early sobriety, I had a lot of friends in early sobriety, getting sober buddies. And it was not difficult to change my life completely, because in my drinking at the end, I wasn't even hanging around with people I knew, and people that I knew, who knew me, that loved me, weren't around me anymore because they didn't want to watch me die. So I was ready to change my life, and everything changed immediately. I didn't come in here wondering if I was an alcoholic, as you probably imagined if you've been listening at all. No, I knew. And my life since, I've never had a particularly hard time understanding the steps. I had a great home group and great sponsorship, and I was shown the big book and started on the steps right away. And I remember when I was about 9 months sober, that voice, alcoholic voice, frightened me by saying, you're having such a good life. This is great. You're going right along. Are you kidding me? You think you're never going to have a drink again? You could live a few years now. You could live another 40 years. You think you're never going to have a drink? And then it popped out of me in the big book. It says, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, we never have to drink again, one day at a time. And I was ready to take my third step. And I got down on my knees with my sponsor and took my third step at a church because it seemed a nice place to take it for no other reason, where our meeting was held, and got an immediate relief that I didn't have to even try to control things anymore. I simply had to be responsible. And I could figure out a way to be responsible if I listened and learned and studied this program. And I pretty much kept that pattern going. Sometimes, not as much as I should, but for a few years, and off and on, I get involved outside my home group in service, and I think it's been one of the most enriching experiences. I know it has been the most enriching experience of my sobriety. Why I don't do more of it is a question in my mind. I've pretty much... I'm a grateful alcoholic, and hopefully I can be grateful till the day I die that I can wake up every day with a kind of a pattern of kind of a third step and an 11th step. And tonight we were studying the 10th step, and I realized that it's pretty automatic in my mind. I can choose to ignore it, and I fail a lot, but I try not to take myself too seriously. But I'm glad now that I have changed enough so that I can see the role I play in this world and how I can function. And I have been able to feel joyous, happy, and free. And when I came in here, joy, happiness, and freedom. Well, none of us who are actively alcoholic know what freedom is. But today I'm free. Today I'm free. I'm free today to choose to drink or not. And I had, when I asked for the obsession to drink to be removed, it was. Because it had to be. If it hadn't been, I wouldn't have been able to stop drinking. A person who drinks for 26 years, I'm not going to start talking about myself in the third person now. I drank for 26 years. I wanted to stop, but I couldn't. So I had, and I was physically addicted. I was in the fourth stage by the time I got sober. So when I got on my knees and asked to have the obsession relieved, it was. And it's the experience of every alcoholic I know who has asked to have the obsession to have alcohol removed has had it removed one day at a time. And sometimes when I have struggles in my life, I'm a person who has to, you know, Capitol records never skip. And I show my age now because that's when we used to have records. And they used to skip. And I put something in my head and I just have to say it over and over again. And I've been able to overcome difficulties by doing that. By saying I'm no longer willing to participate in this destruction of my own body. I'm no longer, if it be thy will, take this away from me. And as I was told when I came in here, it works. When I read that the only scoffers at prayer are those who have not attempted it long enough to see the results. The only people that scoff at prayer are those who have not attempted enough prayer to see the results. I had to do a survey. I had to ask everybody, blah, 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 have you prayed? Blah, blah. So I decided, well, you know, if that's true, that's pretty great. So I think I'll start praying. And sometimes I pray. It's also very, for me, it's very powerful. It's very scary because, you know, if you pray, you might get what you ask for. So I've often had to watch myself there too. And I can't really think about much more to add to that, really. I think my message is simply that this is an all-inclusive fellowship, and there isn't any one of us out there that it isn't here for you to have. It's here, and you can. It's here for the taking. And I'm glad to have been granted another 24 hours. And thank you for asking me to share. And with that, I will. That's it.